Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to start the hour off with a sweet topic. We're going to talk about strawberries. Denny Schrock is here, Master Gardener Coordinator at Iowa State University. Hello, Denny.
Good morning, Charity. Great to be here.
Well, wonderful to have you here. Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And let's talk about strawberries. I think let's start at the beginning. When you go to pick out your strawberry varieties, it's a little bit overwhelming. There are lots and lots of choices. How do you recommend people pick a variety that will work for them?
Well, there's three main categories that they should think about. So one of the first things they should figure out is, what do they want to do with their strawberries? How do they want to use them? Do they want lots of berries at one time for freezing and making jam and so on, or do they want to have fresh berries to pick pretty much all growing season? So that'll determine the basic category, whether they're the June bearing, which is the main crop ones that we're starting to pick right now, the ever bearing or the day neutral. And the ever bearing and day neutral are somewhat the same in that they produce throughout the growing season. The ever bearers tend to have a crop in June and one in the fall. Day neutrals spread out a little bit more throughout the entire growing season.
So, and what's the downside of that? Just you don't have as many at once for processing?
Yes, that's the main thing. And even though the June bearers produce everything all at once, they tend to produce more at that one time than the others do, even by producing all season long. So you have little dribbles and drabs all season long, but you don't get quite as much.
All right. And is there much of a flavor difference, do you think?
Yeah, the flavor is very much a personal preference, and there can be quite a bit of difference in flavors of even the June bearers. So I can't know that we can really categorize or generalize saying that the June bearers are better flavored than the ever bearers or vice versa even. So it's really a personal preference.
Well, and I find it fascinating when you buy, you grow strawberries in your garden, or you buy them at the store, or you buy them at the farmer's market. The homegrown strawberries are usually significantly smaller than the ones that you get from the store, and they taste so much better than the ones that you get from the store. Does size impact flavor, do you think?
Well, there's a lot of people that say, the smaller berries taste better. And there is some truth to that in that, the larger the berry, the more water it has, if you will. So essentially, you're diluting the flavors by having a bigger berry. They can only produce so many of the phenols and other flavonoid compounds that add to the flavor. So yes, there tends to be a more concentrated flavor. There's also the fact that, ones that are shipped a long ways, they're usually not picked quite at their peak of ripeness because they get too soft at that point. So they pick them a little bit early and maybe they haven't developed their full flavor yet.
So let's talk about a strawberry bed. Of course, this is a perennial in your garden. How do you create a strawberry bed that's going to give you the best berries and really maximize that space?
All right. So it depends on which of the categories you're using. So we'll concentrate on the June bearing because that's the major crop and what most people are going to be planting. If you're doing the June bearing varieties, you want to plant the berries about 18 to 24 inches apart in a row. And usually those rows are going to be 3 to 4 feet apart between the rows. Because what happens is you plant the original mother plant, we'll say, and you want to remove the blossoms for the first year on those June bearers and just let it get established and produce its daughter plants to fill in what we call a matted row. So you have the mother plant, and then you have, maybe 8 or 10 daughter plants that are going to fill in that space between that 18 and 24 inches apart, making a bed about 2 feet wide. So, of course, the better the soil you have, the better production. So they can grow well in sandy soils, but you're going to need to add more fertilizer and more water in those situations. In heavy clay soils, they may not have as good a drainage, and you may have some root rot problems. But if you've got good Iowa loam, you should have a great crop of strawberries.
And how do you keep the weeds out of your strawberry bed? And what's your best technique?
Persistence. For the home gardener, it really is hand pulling, hoeing, weeding on a regular basis. I have great personal experience with this. About 40 years ago, I had a 5-acre strawberry patch.
Wow.
And the weeds kind of got away from us that first year. But once you can keep up with those weeds, don't allow the grasses to go to seed, the other weeds to go to seed, you don't have a lot of problem, particularly because you usually have some sort of mulch through the berry patch as well. And that mulch helps to keep the weed sprouting down.
Now, when you start to have strawberries, well, first of all, I should ask you, how long does it take to get a good bed established?
So, the first season is the establishment season. Typically, by then, your second year of growing, you're going to have a good full crop. And then we can later on talk about the renovation to keep it going. And you can't keep it going indefinitely. It does need to be replanted periodically. But usually that first year is a great year for harvest and for several years after that.
How long will it last?
Well, we usually recommend completely replacing your strawberry bed every few years, 3 to 5, we'll say. Part of that depends on what the production of it is. What happens over time is the strawberry plants develop viruses. The insects that feed on them spread viruses, and they tend to become a bit smaller and have more problems with them. So that's at the point when you decide that, yeah, the berries are too small, not doing well. Maybe it's time to replant with something else.
And would you replant with strawberries, or would you move a strawberry bed, start fresh somewhere else in your garden?
Ideally, you would start somewhere else, because one of the other problems that develop is soil-borne fungi like Verticillium wilt, which can attack a lot of different plants, may build up in the soil, and strawberries are susceptible to that. So ideally, move to a different location to start your strawberry patch again.
All right. If you can't move to a new location, can you freshen up that patch somehow?
You can. What you might try would be what we call soil solarization. There used to be soil sterilants that could be used to kill off everything in the soil, but most of those have been removed from the market, and they're not real safe for homeowners to use anyway. But if you put clear plastic over the soil through the summer, it heats the soil so high that it does kill most soil fungi and insects.
All right, let's talk about harvest. When those berries come, what do we need to know to get the most out of the harvest?
Important to harvest frequently. You want to wait until the berries fully color. Now, some varieties tend to have a little bit of a white tip or a white shoulder, so it's somewhat variety dependent there too. But normally you want to wait for the berries to color fully before you harvest. When I was doing it commercially, I would try to pick every other day throughout the patch. If you go longer than that, the berries become overripe and maybe attractive to the picnic beetles or sap beetles and
sure.
other problems like that. So pick frequently, get them cooled down right away. If you are out away from the house and can't get them in a refrigerator, why at least put them in the shade while you're harvesting the rest of the patch, that sort of thing. Get them cooled down right away, and they should remain fresh for you for a few days in the fridge anyway.
Right, but you do have to process. If you're planning to process, you do have to do it pretty quickly.
Yes. The faster you get them taken care of, the better. I know, when we were doing this 5 acres, and you'd sometimes have, say, 100 pounds left over at the end of the day that hadn't all sold out. You really wanted to go to bed, but you better go ahead and get them frozen in the freezer that night.
Now, there are strawberry pots that are very popular when you go to your local garden center. They're kind of neat looking, and they're fun to plant things in. How do you feel about those for growing strawberries?
Well, as you say, they're very decorative. They look great. If you're going for a big yield, it's probably not the best option there. For one, it's difficult to keep them uniformly watered. You're going to have to trickle irrigate from the top down, and oftentimes the bottom ones don't get the same amount of moisture as the ones on the side. It's a fun way to grow if you don't have anything space other than, say, a balcony to grow them on.
And can you overwinter strawberry plants in a strawberry pot? And we talked about that first year being the establishment year, but if you're planting in a pot, you don't necessarily have that kind of time.
That's right. And if you're going to be growing them in a container, you probably need to have something like a window well or someplace else that you can get them semi-buried over winter to protect them from the winter cold. Because usually we say anything growing in a container needs to be two hardiness zones more hardy than what it would be in the ground. So we're talking, most of Iowa is zone 5, so it has to be something that would be hardier in northern Minnesota, say. And most strawberries really won't take that.
All right. And right now it's so hot that it's hard to even think about what happens when it gets cold. But give us just a quick primer on what we do in the fall and early winter to protect those strawberries.
All right. So in the fall, strawberries do need to go at least semi-dormant for winter protection. So you don't want to cover them up too soon. Normally, you want to wait until the temperatures drop down to about 20, 25 degrees for several nights. And usually that's going to be somewhere around mid-November in most of Iowa. Of course, it'll range from southern Iowa to northern Iowa, but somewhere around mid-November. At that point, you can use straw, of course, is a great mulch to use. One reason they're called strawberries, they use straw mulches. If you don't have straw mulch, you can use some other things, but typically we don't recommend using leaves as a mulch because the leaves tend to mat down and smother them out. One thing that I found in my own yard that I do, I don't have a good source of straw real readily available, but I have a lot of ornamental grasses. So I cut down my ornamental grasses and make my own straw out of it.
Nice. And when do you take that straw off in the spring?
In the springtime, you want to remove it. Several different sort of key things to think about. Sometimes some people say when you have 3 days in a row of 70 degree or greater, the real true test is to kind of pull the straw or whatever mulch you have off a little bit and look and see if new growth is beginning. If at least a quarter of the plants are putting out new growth, and you'll be able to see that by sort of the yellow-green new leaves pushing out, at that point it's time to pull that mulch off. Don't get rid of it entirely, however, because as you know, most years we get late frost that you want to pull the mulch back over again.
All right, keep it handy. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Denny Schrock, Master Gardener Coordinator, and Richard Duran is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we are ready and willing to answer your questions about the plants in your life. The number to call, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And when you send an email question, please make it a descriptive question. I know these days it's easy to snap a picture and send that, but we don't have the ability to share those pictures with each other on the radio today. So please send a descriptive question along with your email. With me today, Denny Schrock, Master Gardener Coordinator at Iowa State University, Richard Duran, ISU Extension Horticultural Specialist, and we have already a caller on the line, Dee in Waverly. Hi, Dee.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is, first of all, good morning, and thank you for accepting my call. I have a bird of paradise plant that is several years old. It has two good-sized stems. One has probably about five leaves, nice-sized leaves, and the other is probably a little shorter, maybe four leaves. It's in a south-facing window, gets a lot of sun year-round, and the smaller of the two had another leaf coming up. You know how it's kind of curled as they start up, and it's about just coming out of that stem about maybe an inch and a half or two. And the other one has one coming up also, and that is just growing and coming up normally. I can just watch it every day. It's just a little bit taller. It hasn't unfurled yet. But the first one is that way for about a month and a half. It's just kind of stuck there. Do you have any ideas on why that would be stuck there and is not continuing to grow out?
Well, I would assume it's maybe a plant vigor thing. I might go ahead and fertilize it, and maybe that might help. You might also consider maybe moving it outdoors. If you do so, initially put it in the shade and then gradually expose it to longer periods of sun. And possibly with improved growing conditions, with more sun, with maybe some fertilizer, that may encourage it to fully develop.
And would that be just the regular fertilizer for green plants, for greenhouse plants?
Yeah, I would just use a water-soluble fertilizer and just add a little bit of that to the water when you do water the plants, maybe every 2 weeks or so.
Okay, and do they enjoy being somewhat root-bound? I don't think I need to put in a larger pot, do I?
I don't think you do on that, no.
Okay. All right, yeah. I'll try that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Dee. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. We've got a few lines open for you right now. Here's a question from Gordon. He says, I have a 60-foot-tall cottonwood next to my house in Iowa City. My neighbors hate the cotton seeds. Should I keep the tree? Is it dangerous?
Well, there's a couple issues there. One as far as the debris that comes from the tree. The other is the fact that cottonwoods tend to be very weak wooded. And to me, that would be a concern because in a storm, it's far more likely to break apart, let's say, than an oak tree or a linden tree. So that to me would be probably my biggest concern. If that tree is next to or very close to my house or the neighbor's house, that would be my primary concern.
All right. And the cotton seeds don't last very long.
Well, it's annoying, I must say, but...
And they become weedy. They start popping up
right
wherever they land. And I had a landscape professor who said that cottonwoods should be planted no closer than 2 miles away from a house.
Right. Yeah. You typically don't see them at a garden center. And that's because they are weak wooded and they grow very fast and they can become a hazard tree fairly quickly.
I played with cottonwood seeds so much as a kid. I have a soft spot in my heart for them, but I understand. All right. Here is a question from Tanya in Perry. She says, I have a white pine in a 2 to 3 gallon container, and there are 2 trees growing in the pot. Is it possible to split those in order to plant separately? The trees are both about 2 feet tall, or should I just plant as is and see which tree does better and eventually cut the other one out?
Boy, I guess I would probably try to separate the two.
And what she might want to do is actually do a process called root washing. This is a new planting technique. Well, it's not entirely new, but it's actually a recommended planting technique now is to, rather than keeping the roots bound in the pot form, actually wash all the soil off the roots, and then she can probably tease those roots apart, but make sure she does it quickly, because if those roots dry out, they'll die. So do it quickly and get them in the ground right away.
All right. Have your holes dug and then work on that.
And before the trees get any bigger than they are. The bigger they are, the more difficult. So.
All right. So it's a project for this weekend. Here is a question from Suzanne. I've been offered some free rhubarb plants if I dig them this weekend. I know it's not the best season for transplanting, so I'd like any advice to maximize success. Should I cut them back? Should I put them in a pot, then plant in the ground in the fall? Should I divide them now or wait?
I think what I would do is if she can wait, I would wait and do it like in September, early October.
It sounds like she can't wait.
Okay.
I think she's wondering if she should wait on dividing.
Okay. Well, if they can't wait, what I'd probably do is dig them up probably in the evening, put them right back in the ground as soon as possible, water them thoroughly, and then maybe construct maybe a shade that will shade the plants from the sunlight, maybe using some burlap, whatever, and basically shade those plants for a few days, so they have a chance to get reestablished. Keeping them well watered. If it's really, really hot and sunny, they're going to have some difficulty. So that shade typically would be very important, I think.
All right, here's a question from Chris in Rock Island. He says, I've got a small patch of strawberries, and if I'm lucky, I'm able to pick a ripe berry. Most of the ones I find have a small bite taken out of them. Is it a mouse or a ground squirrel? It doesn't look like a peck, so I don't think it's a bird. What do you think?
All those are possibilities. Yeah, certainly birds can do it. Chipmunks can go after it. Squirrels can go after them. So, you know, he might try putting a netting or something over them to see if you can keep whatever the critter is from going after the berries.
All right, but lots and lots of critters like strawberries.
Yes.
All right, here is a question from Kevin. I'm looking to plant some privacy hedge, something that we can keep trimmed 8 feet tall by 4 feet wide. Can you give pros and cons of hedge cotton Easter versus any of the privets? And regardless of which, should we prune 2 to 3 times this year to promote additional future branching?
I think I would go with arborvitae. There are some very nice cultivars that are very columnar. They would be effective year-round because they're evergreens. And there are certain cultivars that grow to the desired size, as far as 4 feet wide, 8 foot tall. So they wouldn't have to do a whole lot of trimming. They could go with privet, but that requires quite a bit of trimming to keep it in that size. So I think I would look at arborvitae as my first choice.
And with the arborvitae, are you saying one plant would fill in that space or plant a couple? What are you thinking?
Well, if they want a screen and they're wanting that screen to be, let's say, 8 foot tall but only 4 feet wide, they could plant a number of these and have that screen that's pretty effective.
All right. He also says, we planted pear and apple trees last spring. They're roughly 6 feet tall. Should we still be removing the fruit?
Yes. They really shouldn't bear fruit for probably 2 or 3 years. Initially, they need to put all their energy, all their resources into root growth and additional branching and foliage. So if they allow those fruits to form, that kind of slows that down.
All right. You can give us a call with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's another email question. This one from Diane in Sigourney. A grandson got loose with a weed whacker, got my hollyhocks, balloon flowers, and cone flowers whacked. Will any of them come back, or will I have to replace them?
I think they'll come back. It may take a while. They may need to encourage that by maybe giving them some water if they're dry, maybe a little bit of fertilizer. But things like balloon flower, they are perennial plants. They have a good root system. They should have. And so it may take a while, but they probably should come back.
All right. Not ideal care.
Not ideal. No, no.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Alan is on the line in Clarion. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 12-foot Colorado blue spruce, and it's encroaching the neighbor's property line and kind of rubbing on their shed, and he wants me to trim it back. When would be a good time to trim it back, and how do I not hurt it?
Well, the important thing on that is always to retain some growth on the branch. So if you have a branch that sticks out too far, you might prune it back to a side branch. It still has growth on it, and that's okay. So try to do that. And you could do that now if you needed to or later on this summer. But the important thing is always retain some growth, some live growth needles on those branches.
Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Alan. 866-780-9100. Pam is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
What's your question?
I started an asparagus patch, and this year was the first year we finally got to get some out of it. It was awesome. But I had also put some milkweed seeds in, but I didn't think they were going to grow, and they sprouted up last year. We only got like one or two. Now this year I have six. Will they strangle out my asparagus? Should I move those?
I don't think they're very good companions. I would try to remove one of them, yes.
Okay, so most likely the milkweed.
Probably.
Yeah, that's a little easier to establish elsewhere.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Pam. 866-780-9100 is the number. An email question from Iowa City. Our bearded iris were installed in a full sun section of our east-facing garden last year and showed a handful of blooms this season. When is a good time period to provide them with fertilizer?
Spring would be a good time, typically. I don't think they need a whole lot. I would just sprinkle maybe a small amount of 10, 10, 10, probably around mid-April or so.
All right. And here's a question from Allison in Iowa City. I live near a wooded park with a heavy deer population. I have a 2-foot-tall potted banana plant, and I'd like to set it out for the summer. I'm wondering if the deer would leave it alone.
Good question. I don't think we have an answer on that.
We don't have a lot of data on deer and bananas in Iowa, but I can say that I have had banana plants in my yard, and we have lots of deer, and the deer have not touched them. That's not to say that they won't go after yours, because if deer are hungry enough, they'll eat most anything.
All right. Well, and I guess you can let us know. We can start a little database about deer and banana.
Right.
All right. Janelle says, my daughter has a fairy garden and her snapdragon she recently moved to a small pot is not flowering and it's been in the pot about a month. Also, what's the best container for a fairy garden?
Well, let's start with the containers for fairy garden as sort of a general question. Most fairy gardens, you use sort of a large, low, flat container. Because you're wanting to create a miniature landscape. So you don't need a real deep thing for it. So something that would be good for succulents is also great for fairy gardens. As far as her snapdragon not blooming, I mean, I don't know how big it was. Normally, they take about 12 weeks to bloom from seed. So I don't know how large it was when she got it. It may just not be quite mature enough to be blooming. So,
patience
might be the watchword there.
And it's her only option, so.
Right.
All right. Thanks a lot for your question, Janelle. Let's get back to the phones. Jill is on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Jill.
Can you hear me?
Yes. What's your question?
Okay. My question is following up on the great advice about about replanting some blueberry plants I moved around. And Richard, thanks for telling me to move them out from my fence. And now I'm wondering, how many years do I keep adding an acids solution from a local store to the blueberry soil around them? I know the two I moved, I'll probably have to do that, but do we do it every year?
I would do it on an annual basis. I would take some sulfur and just sprinkle a little bit around the plants every spring. On an annual basis, because our pHs tend to be quite high, and to keep them low, probably every year.
And you mean a straight sulfur of some kind?
Excuse me?
Sulfur?
Ordinary sulfur.
I need to buy?
I would
because there's like an expensive mix, you know, at stores, but.
Yeah, I would go with just ordinary elemental sulfur that you can find in some garden centers. Do not use aluminum sulfate. The aluminum might harm the blueberry. So just look for ordinary elemental sulfur. It's kind of yellow-green in color.
Thank you so very much. Great.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for your call, Jill. 866-780-9100 is the number, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Becky is on the line next in Clayton County. Hi, Becky.
Yeah. Hi, good morning. My question is, I just wonder what your thoughts are on using a product on my strawberries to keep the grasses down. It's grass beater. I think it's by Bonide. And it says it's safe for strawberries and asparagus. And I just wondered what your thoughts are on using it.
I'm not familiar with that product. Do you know what the active ingredient is offhand?
Oh, see, no, I can't, and it's out in my garden shed, and so, but it's, it's been on the market a long time, and I have used it in years past, and it is very effective, and it's, you know, but no, it, sorry, I can't remember what the product is in it, so.
But if it is labeled for strawberries and for grass control, it should be perfectly safe to use. Yes, if you follow those label directions closely.
Okay, all right, and yes, and that's what I've done, and like I said, I've had good luck, but I just, you know, wondered what your thoughts were. But okay, all right, I should have checked before I called in, so.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Becky, 866-780-9100. Here's a question from Jordan. Jordan says, I'm waiting for someone to come dig space for a large berm as I type. Any last-minute advice you can give me before we break sod? I'm guessing that Jordan probably wants to know a little bit about establishing plants on the berm after the fact. Do you have any advice?
As far as getting a good source of soil, you want some nice, well-drained, fertile soil, not a lot of clay. You may add some organic matter to the soil, but you obviously want a good growing mix or growing soil. So make sure it's a good, well-drained, fertile soil, and maybe add some organic matter to it.
All right. We certainly see some berms where people really struggle with getting plants established after the berm gets built.
Right. So don't base it on the color of the soil. Base it on the texture of the soil as far as what's good.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more of your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, is here along with Denny Schrock, Master Gardener Coordinator. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Denny Schrock, Iowa Master Gardener Coordinator, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go back to the phones. Matthew is on the line in Dallas. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, good morning.
What's your question?
I've got a serious problem with pocket gophers. Normally I would see them I live acreage outside of town, and normally I would see them in the ditch, little mounds of dirt, but now they're they're showing up along the fence row between me and a farm field and out into my yard.
Okay. So you're seeing just big mounds of soil, correct?
Oh, that, and I've actually saw one of the guys. I happened to come upon him while he was in the process and caught him face to face.
Okay.
His head sticking out of the ground.
Typically, when you're dealing with pocket gophers, the best way to control them is by trapping. That's usually the best way.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to be persistent. But usually that's the best way to control them, is by trapping.
Trapping how?
With a trap, and you basically destroy it or kill it. Where you set the trap in the tunnel, and hopefully they come back and they're basically destroyed.
And there's a couple different types of traps. There's a box trap, which I think is the easiest type to use, where you have to find where their tunnel opening is, dig down in, set the box trap down in the trap, and kind of cover it back up so they don't suspect that anything's going, and it's got to be in an active runway, and then they'll trap that. And of course, you have the trap staked so they don't drag it off somewhere as well.
Right. So you kind of drag away the soil and kind of poke around with the stick until you find the actual opening. Then you clear the opening, set the trap in there, and you crush your fingers.
That's a lot of work.
Well, but you can definitely do it. It's definitely doable.
All right.
You might be able to find some neighbor boys that know how to trap. I did it growing up. We used to get 25 cents a gopher foot for trapping the gophers.
All right. Well, Matthew, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Tom in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
I just had a question about, how often should a person, aerate their yard? I've been reading about it, and I found some information from Cornell University, and they were saying that grass should be aerated, but they didn't specify how many, what frequency or when it should be done.
Well, it depends upon the situation. For example, we typically aerate if we have a clay type soil,
okay,
to improve aeration, okay. We also tend to aerate if we have a lot of foot traffic on the lawn. So if you have those two things, you may want to do it on an annual basis. On the other hand, if you have a very good, well-drained soil, and if you have very low foot traffic on it, it may not be that critical. So if you do it every 4 or 5 years, that may be fine. So kind of really depends upon the situation. But if you have a clay-type soil, where the grass is having a very hard time growing, you may want to do it basically in the spring and also in late summer.
Okay.
To improve
okay.
growing conditions for the grass.
The second part of the question I had was, when using an aerator, does it cut deep enough that a person would need to call like a utility company to make sure that they're not running over something important, or are utility lines normally buried deep enough not to worry about
it? I don't think you'd have to worry about that. Typically, when you aerate the lawn, you want to use a core aerator that pulls out plugs of soil. And typically, you want to go down as deep as you can, maybe 3 inches or so. You typically want to do it when the soil is moist, not when it's dry, because it's going to be very hard to penetrate the soil, or not when it's wet, because the tines may get plugged with soil. So basically do it when it's moist. You can do it in the spring and also in like September. But basically about 3 inches deep is all you're going to go.
The only utility you might have a problem with is a cable. Sometimes the cables that cable companies put out, they barely bury them under the surface. So that might be a problem, but anything else should be no problem at all.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Tom. And next we'll go to Kathy in Marion. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
What's your question?
Hello. I have two questions. One is back with the strawberry bed. My strawberry bed this year was pretty much taken over by Creeping Jenny. And other than pulling and pulling, is there anything I can do for that?
There's not a good selective control for Creeping Jenny in strawberries because they're both broadleaf perennials. So anything that kills one would kill the other. So, maybe it's time to completely renovate your strawberry bed and move it somewhere else. But yeah, pulling out the Creeping Jenny is probably your best bet.
Okay, because I had the lawn sprayed, and the lawn is great now, but it found its way to the strawberry bed. My second question is, I have like Asian lilies and Oriental lilies, and oh my gosh, they're just going crazy. Do I need to thin them out?
Over time, they can get very thick, and if they are not blooming as well as they have in the past, it may be an indication that it's time to divide them and spread them out a bit. But if they're growing great guns, I would not move them at this point yet. And of course, you can do best to do it while they're dormant. So I would do it in the fall if you're going to do that.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Jessica is on the line in Eldora. Hello, Jessica.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, what's your question?
Okay, so I had a large patch of hens and chicks that were growing in front and around our house, and they spread like ground cover, and every year they've done really well. And it seemed like my patch, as well as my mother's patch, died off this winter, and I wondered if it was due to the fact that we really didn't have a spring, or if they just got to the end of a life cycle and it's time to put down new ones, or if they choked each other out. We both noticed that we lost over half of our plants, and they'd been so hardy for so many years.
If they were fine last fall, we did have a really kind of an odd winter in that we had a very warm November, early December, warmer than normal. And then in December, late December, it got brutally cold. And
without snow cover.
Without snow cover. And then we had a very cold November and early April. I think maybe the strange weather may have affected them. They definitely don't like to be exposed during the winter. They don't like wet soil. So maybe there was something there where the weather conditions were such where they didn't do very well.
Should they be covered, or we leave them uncovered? But I wondered if maybe the fact that we didn't cover them, if that led to this.
Right. Normally we have sufficient snow cover where they're fine. So we don't really do anything.
Okay.
You could cover them lightly if you wish to in the fall, like in November with maybe some straw or pine needles. But usually we have sufficient snow cover, so we don't really have to do anything.
Do you think she should replant to fill in this area?
I would probably try, maybe try a few plants, see how they do. The other possibility, they might have some type of root rot or something, which could affect those too. So I would try a few plants, see how they do, If they don't do well, then maybe they have a root rot, and I would look for an alternate site.
All right, Jessica, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Craig in Grafton. Hello, Craig.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about sumac. So we planted a couple of plants and maybe 4 years ago, and now it's gone underground and it's going everywhere. Is mm-hmm. there a way to control that?
Not really.
New ones or?
No. Only thing you can do is remove them as they sprout, but there's no way to prevent that sprouting in the future. So that's one of their characteristics. To many yeah. people, that's not a very endearing characteristic, but that's what they do. They tend to form colonies. That's their natural habit.
And the easiest okay. way to keep it under control is to, as Richard says, remove those new shoots just as they emerge. So, you know, before they get 6 or 12 inches tall, just get out there and break them off. And they will resprout from that same area again, but be persistent with it, and you can keep them from sending up new shoots everywhere.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Craig. Next, let's go to Jim in Clear Lake. Hello, Jim.
Hi there.
What's your question?
We have some low-lying evergreens. I think they're like junipers that we have on a bank, mm-hmm. and they've been here for probably 20 years.
Okay.
But they really look dry. Each year they're getting drier, and there's areas where there are no pine or no needles. The ends of the branches, but it's just getting drier and drier. Do they need to be replaced, or can they be revived?
Well, junipers are susceptible to a number of needle blights, where they mm-hmm. do decline, where you see browning of the foliage, they become thinner yeah. over time, and they just don't look very attractive. And so
yeah.
if they have gotten to that point, I would probably remove them and maybe put in something different. Maybe a different type of evergreen, maybe a yew or something of that nature. But I think maybe they have maybe contacted a disease, and I think they may continue to decline, and I would be inclined to maybe replace them.
Okay, now there are areas, that there are patches of them that are they look good.
Right.
Probably half of them are, as you said, brown and dry and deteriorated.
Right, so and I think the rest of them that look good over time, they'll also go the same route. And
okay.
so I would be inclined to remove them all, and I think start over with something different.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. And next, let's talk to Denise in Muscatine. Hi, Denise.
Hello. I'm calling. We live on an acreage, and we have a lot of blackberry briars that are growing everywhere. Is there any way to get rid of the blackberry briars without killing all the vegetation around them?
Boy, I think you're going to have to either dig them up, destroy them that way, or use a herbicide. But either way, I think some of the nearby plants will also be damaged or destroyed. So either something like Roundup or glyphosate, or physically digging them up.
Is there any way to apply it carefully to get maybe just most of the blackberries? Rather, because we have 20 acres of this stuff.
Right.
And digging them up really isn't
okay.
an option.
Well, there are cone-type devices that you can attach to your sprayer that helps to direct the spray to the plant you want to kill. So you might use something of that nature to help direct that spray to the plants you want to kill.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Denise. Next up, Linda in Des Moines. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is, I started a pussy willow bush, the plant, a small, start with roots on it, and I just want to be sure that it grows, and I want to know, do you have any advice on what I should use on it? I know it's medicinal. Some of my little bunny rabbits, I put a fence around it
mm-hmm.
to keep them off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard it's medicinal, and sometimes they might be chewing on it. I want to know what I can do to make it live. It's my third time to start one of these little plants.
Okay. So it is in the ground right now?
It is in the ground. Okay. It has some, you know, starter leaves on it. Okay. I'm so happy.
Okay. So what I would do is water that on a regular basis when it's dry.
Right.
And I would put either chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth around it, at least 2 feet tall, so the rabbits can't get it, because the rabbits do love this plant. And
I
in the wintertime, if they have access to it, they will eat it right down to the ground. Have something like chicken wire fencing, hardware cloth, make sure it's at least 2 foot tall, leave it there for a number of years, at least a couple of years, let it get big. But the main thing is make sure the rabbits don't get it and make sure it has water.
All right, Linda, good luck with that. Here's a question from Diane. I have a river birch planted last year that got a poor start. The nursery planted sooner than expected, and it didn't get its initial drenching. It got too dry, and rabbits or deer got at it, not girdled, but nearly. It was late leafing out this year with a few dead branches and pale leaves. Is there hope? Anything I can do to help it out?
The main thing, again, is make sure it has water. The birch is a floodplain type tree, so it likes plenty of moisture, and when it gets dry, if it doesn't have moisture, it's going to basically not do well. So make sure it's watered regularly during dry weather. If there are rabbits or other pests around that would chew on it, again, the fencing material, and see how it does. And after a couple of years, if it seems to be getting better, then okay. But if it doesn't after a couple of years, then it may not recover.
All right, and here's a strawberry question to end on from Danielle in Ankeny. She said, I have a small patch of strawberries. The strawberries are starting to turn red, but they don't look that great. The seeds are raised up off the berries, and some of them have a strange shape. The top is kind of stretched out. Is there something different I should be doing to care for them?
Without seeing exactly what they look like, I'm not sure. It sounds like she may either have possibly tarnished plant bug as an insect that feeds and causes the berries to get kind of hard. There's also a few fungal diseases that have kind of leathery appearance to the fruit. So maybe something like that is going on. She might want to check out our guide sheet on growing strawberries that have some things about disease control too. So she could go to the Iowa State Extension store and get the guide sheet on growing strawberries, and I'll tell her a little bit more. Maybe she can actually see some pictures then of what's going on.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Danielle. And Denny Schrock, thank you so much.
Great being here. Thank you.
And Denny, I learned that you are retiring at the end of this month. So happy retirement. Thank you so much for being a part of Hort Day.
I can pick lots of strawberries.
Yeah. I hope you have some great plans. And retired people are welcome on the show. So you can come back if you've got a little time.
All right.
Denny Schrock, Master Gardener, Coordinator, and Lecturer at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We'll be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day. And we also have another goodbye to say today. Iowa Public Radio talk show producer Ben Stanton is leaving us. And Ben, we just want to say thank you for your good work, for your enthusiasm, for your sense of adventure, your sense of humor. You are a great producer, and we'll miss your work, but mostly we're just going to miss you. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.